What is Peace Brain? Peace Brain is the synergistic connection between our mental and emotional bodies, blending the electrical power of the mind with the magnetic force of the heart. Listen and explore how to create unity worldwide as we blend science and metaphysics and open our hearts and minds to the possibilities of peace on Earth and create the life we are each destined for. Featured guests range from angel communicators to zoologists and everything in between. Now here is your host, Dr. Gail Lash.
Welcome to the Peace Brain Show. This is your host, Dr. Gail Lash, and we're so happy to have you here today. This is January 2018, and very excited for the new year. I have a guest today, Sherry Henderson, that we're going to be talking about animals and animal rights. So stay tuned. We're going to have a lively discussion about that. But as you know, I open the show with a quote, and then, of course, stay to the end of the show because we have an amazing Peace Brain meditation that you can also participate in. But the quote today, because we're talking about animals, I have this amazing array of quotations that I've collected over the years. And this one just stuck with me when I went to go find the one for tonight. And it says, "Why did God make dogs?" And I do not know who this is from. This is an anonymous quote. But let me read it to you. It says, "Why did God make dogs? I don't think it was accidental. So why do you suppose hounds are around? Recently, I watched an elderly woman trying to recover from a stroke. Her brain was damaged and her arm was weak. So her therapist brought in, of all things, a dog to help out. Instead of completing monotonous drills, the elderly patient threw a bright red frisbee across the room and the dog bounced over, picked it up, and brought it back with his eyes begging, 'Throw it again, please.' And she did, over and over and over, forgetting that she was actually working quite hard. What possessed God to make dogs anyway? Certainly there are exceptions, and certainly people can breed dogs to bring out the worst in them. But in general, there is nothing more selfless, loving, or patient than a dog. Mistreat it, and it comes back to you anyways. Ignore it, and it never gives up hope that you will be its friend again. Make it wait days to go play, and it will be ready. It offers you friendship and companionship, and in return asks for only food, water, and an occasional scratch behind the ears. Why would God bother to make such a creature? I suppose if dogs were like people, they would eventually give up on us. But they never do. A dog's love is almost impossible to destroy, because it's not a love you earn. It's simply a love you are given. In other words, dogs love unconditionally. Unconditional love, unending patience, faithfulness to the very end. Do you suppose, just perhaps, that God made dogs to show us a little something about himself? Do you think maybe man's best friend is really pointing us to the one who is truly our best friend? You could learn a lot from a dog. And dog spelled backwards is God. So I like this quote absolutely, as you can see. It points out just how amazing animals can be, particularly when they are our friends, when they come and live in our homes and really become part of our family, that they can become that kind of companion that really uplifts our spirit and brings a whole new unconditional love, as the quote says, to our life. So today we're going to be talking about animals and how they really impact the human race and how we sometimes treat them quite horribly and what we might be able to do about that. So today I want to introduce our guest, Dr. Sherry Henderson. She is an amazing lady that lives here in Atlanta, Georgia. She's actually the owner and director of The Inner Space, which is a metaphysical school and store here in Atlanta, Georgia, or more specifically, Sandy Springs, Georgia. And you can go to www.theinnerspace.com That's www.theinnerspace.com. So let me read you a little bit about Sherry. Dr. Henderson is the director and owner of the Inner Space. It's been in existence since 1991, or she's been owner of it since then. It's a holistic and metaphysical center. She's president also of Atlantean Mystery Schools, which began in 1995, and the publisher and editor of Oracle 20-20 magazine, which grew to its full-fledged glossy cover magazine in 2000. An avid, long-life interest in metaphysics opened the door for her to become involved in the Inner Space. As both a client and a student, she was already well-versed in tarot, astrology, and metaphysics from her studies with a prominent Atlanta psychic Laverne Hall, took classes in astrology at Inner Space and with Sheila Conrad and Judy Bridges Murphy. Dr. Henderson furthered her education, including studying under the renowned astrologer Alan Aachen of the University of Santa Fe, world-famous Vedic astrologer James Braha, Phil Lout, the father of rebirthing. She took classes with Greg Braden, Doreen Virtue, and a number of other well-known metaphysical and holistic teachers. She obtained her doctorate in divinity under Dr. Raymond Moody. And Sherry's been active and participating in a number of local and national holistic and metaphysical expos. She's also organized a number of charitable events, including pet adoptions at the Animal Fair, put on by the Inner Space, and private cat adoptions. Today, she teaches courses in astrology, tarot, psychic development, and other classes through the Atlantean Mystery Schools. She sees a private clientele from all over the world for tarot, astrological, and psychic readings through the Inner Space. She also personally does the layout and design and the editing for Oracle 2020 magazine. And she organizes and oversees a monthly psychic fair, numerous events and classes, along with the day-to-day operations of three businesses. She is an amazing lady, and I want to introduce you to her. Welcome, Sherry, to the Peace Brain Show.
Thank you, Gail. Wow, that sounds like a lot. I should resign from something.
You've been working a long time on all of this. You're an expert. It's wonderful.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you again. And it's really a pleasure to be able to speak about one of my passions, which is animal rights.
Yes.
And welfare. So thank you again for inviting me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, animals are a big passion of mine, too. And so let's have a discussion. Let's talk about this. What got you interested, really, in working for animal rights?
I've been an animal lover all of my life. When I was young, my grandmother had a farm, and she had horses and dogs and cats and chickens. Mm-hmm. And it really troubled me. Even as a child, I couldn't eat the chickens because I had to think about how they died. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't eat chicken during my entire childhood. And I really knew that it wasn't okay for me to eat meat and to see the suffering of animals, mm-hmm, being slaughtered. So that started for me very young. And as far as domestic animals, those animals at my grandmother's farm had a wonderful place to live. They weren't factory farmed, but just the idea of having to kill to live didn't really resonate with me.
It is kind of a non sequitur, you're right.
Two different times in my life. Mm-hmm. And this last time I've been a vegetarian now for about 30 years.
Wow, that's amazing. So if you were going to, I want to sort of sidestep for a second here. Being a vegetarian, what would you suggest to someone who wants to become a vegetarian? How is that, what kind of, well, recipes or things might be available to make that transition from being a meat eater, a carnivore, an omnivore, into vegetarianism?
Well, the thing is that when I started being a vegetarian, I was a junk food vegetarian, and I put on about 20 pounds right away with French fries. So that's not the way to do it.
Right.
A person really should check into a training program for what to eat. There's a lot of things online that will give you great information. I can mention that Brenda Cobb has the Temple of Living Foods mm-hmm. here in Atlanta, mm-hmm. and she teaches people how not only to eat vegetarian, but how to eat raw food, how to sprout their food, and that sort of thing. That's a wonderful resource. But again, if you want to cook your food, there's plenty of information online about food combining, how to get complete protein, how to get all the vitamins you need, and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, excellent. And in fact, Brenda has been a guest on the Peace Brain Show as well. And so, listeners, you can go to one of my archived radio shows and find that with Brenda Cobb, absolutely, from the Living Foods Institute. So going back to animals now, you became a vegetarian because obviously killing them was traumatic for you as a child. But how did you... First of all, how did you enjoy the farm? I mean, was it fun to be on a farm anyway?
Oh, well, it was great fun. And the one day that I remember is the day that my cousins and I decided we would ride the pigs.
Tell us about that.
So, you know, the pigs obviously weren't very clean. They were just as happy as they could be. You've heard of the old saying, happy as a pig in mud. Well, they were certainly in mud. We came back to the house from the barn, covered in mud, and my grandmother wouldn't let us come in the house. She made us hose down in the yard. And needless to say, we never rode the pigs. We couldn't catch them right. But it just seemed like a good idea for a 10-year-old.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. And pigs are big. You know, I guess you can ride them if you're a kid.
They were very big.
Oh, that's funny. That reminds me of the two puppies that we have now from our litter that we had in May. And so they're 8 months old now. They love to go out in the yard and dig holes. And they come in with black paws. And we don't let them in the house. We have to give them a bath, hose off their feet. So, mm-hmm. Yep, similar stuff. Wow. So tell us a little bit about then what you started to do. Did you become an activist right away, or you just changed your personal habits?
I didn't, and I didn't even change my personal habits until I was in my 30s. I just fell into the trance of thinking that my meat came from the grocery store wrapped up in cellophane and had nothing to do with animals. Mm-hmm. That's a sort of a common thing that people do, because I think if people really realized the pain and suffering that animals went through, they wouldn't buy those nice little packages of red things that have no resemblance to an animal mm-hmm. and take it home, cook it, and eat it. It's really about compartmentalizing. We all tend to compartmentalize those things which are too painful for us to look
mm-hmm.
at.
Mm-hmm. It's true. We do. And if we don't think about it, then it makes it, quote, okay, unquote. But it really isn't. Do you have any idea then how many, I was going to go to some facts, and I don't have them in my head, of how many animals are slaughtered each year to support just the U.S. or maybe even just Georgia?
I really don't have any idea how many are slaughtered. The things I know more about are about the factory farming and the way that factory farming is polluting our rivers and lakes. And it's really creating a situation where the rivers and lakes are no longer healthy because the sunlight can't filter through in order to clean the water.
Mm-hmm.
Traditionally, sunlight cleans the water and disinfects it. And now with the sediment that comes from the factory farms, we're really faced with more diseases that come from water than ever before. There's the brain-eating microbe that can get into your ears and sinuses when swimming in infected bodies of water, especially in the South, in Florida, mm-hmm. Mississippi, and in the southern states, that people have really quit swimming in lakes because of these kinds of things. And factory farming is really contributing to this and really impacting humans a lot.
Well, that is sad because I love swimming in rivers and lakes. I mean, that's just a natural thing to do. Not to mention that a lot of our cities get their water, their drinking water, from these sources as well. So think of all the oh my goodness, the water treatment plants that we have to put into place just because of the factory farming. Yeah.
True.
That's amazing. I know even shrimp farming in Belize. I was doing some research in Belize in Central America, and the shrimp is really popular there, and they do farm it in these huge factory farms, practically, big tanks. And that, too, is polluting the rivers and the oceans there. And so all of these large manufacturing plants that put together, I mean, it's different than having a farm with animals on it, which still you're slaughtering the animals. But these factory farms are so much worse.
They're like a house of horrors, Dale.
Well, was it back? Oh, my goodness. I didn't do the research for this, but was it Conrad who did the book back in the 1910s or so, talking about factory farming? I'll have to look it up. There was this famous book that was written that basically turned heads of to how we were treating animals back in the early 1900s.
Right.
And that eating meat was not very safe in many regards because of that. Looking at peace, then if we are to become vegetarians, and I will go this far to say that I know in many holy scriptures, it talks about that in the future, people will not be eating meat. They will be eating plants. And that from our plants, the medicines come. And so our food is our medicine. So in the future, let's say we are not going to have these factory farms, look into a new world, if you will, where plants and animals and all of us can get along, and we are vegetarian, if not just sun worshipers and getting all of our energy from chi coming in, which maybe the new human will in the great future. But what can we do then to help, if you will, as an activist perhaps, or just in our working with our local communities to help promote a better quality of life for animals in general now?
Well, Gail, and thank you for asking that question, because I think that the first thing we have to do is to be at peace with ourselves. And once we can come to a place where we're at peace with ourselves, then we can be at peace with other humans and with animals as well. The things that we can do is we can volunteer at shelters. We can not proliferate the populations of dogs and cats and other pets, if you will. Be responsible pet owners, have your animals spayed and neutered, and if you want to adopt from a shelter rather than adopting from a breeder. If you really want to do something more hands-on, you can volunteer at some of the shelters. Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful thing to do. I know people and have a good many friends who actually adopt a feral cat community. And they take care of the entire community of cats. They catch the cats. They have them spayed and neutered. And they leave them in the wild around whatever dumpster they're around and feed them and make sure that they're healthy. So that when that colony does die out, it won't proliferate. It won't make more cats and kittens. And I think that's something that we can all think about doing. Not everybody's up for catching cats and taking them in and having them spayed and neutered. John and I did that for a good while. When we had our old steak and ale building, we actually had about 18 to 20 cages of cats at one time. We had 7,000 square feet in the building, and everybody that worked there took over cleaning litter boxes, feeding cats, that sort of thing, to the point that it started smelling like a zoo, and we just decided we can't do this here. We
run
a spiritual holistic center. We don't run an animal shelter.
Right.
And we started doing things other ways. I donate advertising to a rescue organization. Mm-hmm. That's something that people can do, is donate money if they don't have any time to donate or to give. And if nothing else, if you see a stray animal that looks pitiful, and just give it something to eat, just mm-hmm. the same thing you would a person.
Exactly.
And first and foremost, if you can become a vegetarian, if it's something that you are able to do, not everyone can, but if you are able to become a vegetarian, that actually contributes an unbelievable amount to animal welfare mm-hmm. because a number of animals per year are not slaughtered because you are not eating them.
Well, it certainly would help, you're right, not proliferate the birthing or the farming of these animals. But then, so let me play devil's advocate for a moment. What then can, and obviously you probably don't have this answer, but I'm putting this out there to the universe. What then sure. can the farmers, not just the factory farmers, but the actual farmers who are making their living in sheep and goats and cows and chickens do if we all become vegetarians? So, in other words, there needs to be a whole other avenue.
And there are statistics about the amount of land that's used to raise one cow, mm-hmm. how much it can raise in food. I think that what one cow can feed in the way of the farmer raising it, that same farmer could use this mm-hmm. that same amount of space to raise vegetables. Obviously,
yes.
in a factory farm situation, that couldn't be done, but in a regular family farm, it could be done very easily. I know my grandfather raised so much corn mm-hmm. just to feed the cows.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you're correct.
So if we're feeding the humans the corn rather than feeding the cows the corn, then that could substitute the income right there.
Exactly. And you're right, it does take a lot of acreage to produce just the feed for all of this livestock, and certainly all that could be turned into food for humans, absolutely. And then, of course, we've got then these wonderful new ways of raising food with not only hydroponics, but aquaponics, and just, you know, almost in your own living room, and you're certainly in corporations even in Japan, they're putting these wonderful hydroponic vegetable gardens within the corporate setting. So you have greenery within the corporation, the workspace, and then it can be harvested to actually feed the employees in the cafeteria. And it's greening up all of the urban settings, which is just beautiful. And of course, enhances our psyche, our feeling good about ourselves, not only the oxygen in the air. So there's new ways to farm that are not just the old ways of farming, is my point here.
Absolutely. And vegetable roof gardens are very popular now mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. And there are a number of restaurants and supermarkets that are putting in roof gardens. Of course, it takes a lot of extra structural support to be able to do that. You can't mm-hmm. just go up on a flat roof and put a bunch of dirt and start growing vegetables. You're going to have a cave-in pretty
That's
soon.
That's true. That's true.
However, with the proper support, it's a wonderful way for restaurants to offer fresh vegetables right there on the premises.
Exactly. So let's talk about a little bit about how animals can be used to help people get through traumas, get through their daily life. A little bit like the quote I brought in from the beginning of the elderly patient and the dog. Have you been involved in any of that kind of work?
Very little. It's something we're working toward incorporating in what we do, is to bring elderly people, children, and animals all together, because the three of those groups tend to get along so well together. It's amazing to watch children with animals, especially mm-hmm. children who have been abused or who have been battered in some way. If they can do something with an animal, they can trust that animal where they might not be able to trust mm-hmm. a person. And with an elderly person, an animal is oftentimes the only friend that they have all day long when they're alone. Mm-hmm. And it's a wonderful companion. So those are just two minor ways that mm-hmm. animals can help. Service animals are a wonderful gift for us to be able to have an animal to help people who come back from war mm-hmm. with PTSD to recover. There's a good bit of work also being done in the prisons mm-hmm. with bringing dogs from the humane societies into the prisons to work with the prisoners.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure just exactly what the success rates are, but I did read a wonderful article about that a few months ago that talked about just how responsive the prisoners were with the animals, and when they were given an animal to care for, how their entire personality would come out, and you could see a very loving side of the person that you
beautiful.
Didn't see ordinarily.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And you're right about that trust. You know, really holding an animal just is so, that unconditional love that the quote was talking about, it's really, it's a whole different feeling than what we normally get from each other, human to human.
True, yeah.
So how has being an animal advocate or and lover affected you lately?
Well, the most recent thing was that we had four cats that we obtained pretty close together. We adopted two cats from a rescue organization and brother and sister mm-hmm. that we had for 2 years when a mama cat gave birth in our yard to three kittens.
Right.
One of the kittens we found a home for. One of them we found before his eyes were barely open and I bottle fed him. Mm-hmm. And the other one we brought in when she was 6 months old. We did trap the mama cat and we did manage to get her spayed and let her go back out and live out her life outdoors. Because feral cats often don't do well when you bring them in. Mm-hmm. However, our little six-month-old did extremely well. Mm-hmm. And for a number of years, we had four cats in our house.
Right.
Even though we intended to have two. The last of those cats became very ill with some dental infections and refused to eat. I thought it might help if I'd get him a companion. He was 16. And I brought in a little girl who's also 16 to be his companion. Well, he didn't care much about her and she didn't care much about him. And the dental infection ran rampant and nothing the vets could do to make him eat would work. And he finally did succumb to it. But I now have this little 16-year-old female cat that's absolutely my little love bug. I love having her. It's wonderful to have an animal around. Mm-hmm. I think that she's my companion when I'm working at home. We even take her on trips with us.
Aww.
We put her in her little carrier and she mm-hmm. rides in the car and she'll go out of town with us, which we've never taken cats out of town before. So we've become just a little bit silly over this cat.
Oh, that sounds pretty normal. You know, that sounds like a great cat owner, in other words. It's so important to make that animal part of your life. And certainly she has made herself part of your life. That's awesome.
She certainly has. She's even gone to work with me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Do you have other cats at the Inner Space?
We do not. We always had cats at the Inner Space for a lot of years. And when we had to give up our large building, our cat named Tom Parker was not really very safe in our new place because we didn't have a way to protect him against just running out the front door.
Right.
And we found a great home for him. We did find that we're happier not having cats in the business property. Just because we have clients who are allergic and
right.
some people are actually afraid of cats. Mm-hmm. I'm always mystified, but that there is that phobia. So I have my cats at home now.
That makes me think of the Egyptian, the mummy where the mummy is afraid of the cat.
Yeah.
Who knows who's traveling in these metaphysical circles.
Right, exactly.
So tell us a little bit more about the Inner Space and what you do there.
The Inner Space is a community center for metaphysical people. We have classes and workshops that are there under the auspices of the Atlantean Mystery Schools. We have a monthly psychic fair there. We do readings there regularly. I say what the inner space is for is to be an anchor for the metaphysical community. We offer our space to anyone who would like to have a workshop or a class there. And we have people who come in who are guest psychics from all over the United States. So that's primarily what we do. Mm-hmm. Along with the inner space, we have the bookstore and we have the magazine, the Oracle 2020.
Yeah, so let's talk about the magazine because that has become an icon in Atlanta, Georgia, and I'm sure even further wide than just Atlanta. It's an amazing magazine, and I know you can also subscribe online, even if you're not local to Atlanta, Georgia. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the magazine started out as an offshoot from the Inner Space as a newsletter, and people started wanting to put advertising into the magazine. And so we started taking advertising, and it grew from there. And in 2000, Dan Liss, who had been the founding editor for Aquarius magazine, moved back into Atlanta, Georgia, and he was looking for a job. It turned out about the time I was ready to really launch this magazine. Mm. So he was with us and really got our, our foundations for us to be a magazine and to be in the form we're in now. And we really try to help people become aware of what's going on in the world. Sometimes we run some pretty controversial articles. Our magazine isn't just all love and light. It's about having people look at things and be realistic about things. We really want to raise awareness and to help people really live their vision and to give them the tools to help them live their vision as well. We also want to be a good resource for the community to be able to get their word out. That's how we started out the magazine, was when people really wanted to use our platform to get our word out. And they wanted to reach new clients and new people. So we grew from just a little four-page fold over to the glossy cover that we are right now. And we're actually even launching a new mobile campaign for advertisers so that people in the community will be able to reach people on their mobile phones.
Awesome.
This seems to be the latest thing right now. People don't even want to get an email. They want to go right to their telephone. We said, well, let's give them that. Let's do it. We try to be cutting edge and stay on top of whatever's going on to help the community and to help everyone in it to grow and to prosper and to thrive.
Well, I know the Oracle 2020 has been an anchor really for the metaphysical community here in the Southeast and, you know, Atlanta. I'm just going to read off some of the titles from at least the December 2017 magazine, which is over 30 pages. And the one article here on the front is advertised. It says, "Is Schizophrenia and Fear?" Another article is "Making a Case for Flying Saucers." A third one is "Mary Magdalene and the Return of the Divine Feminine." There's so much here. It really is quite a all-encompassing magazine. I really appreciate you doing that, Sherry, because it has been so cool to have to be able to not only have, as you said, the advertisers and who's doing what in the Atlanta, greater Atlanta and Georgia area, but also these wonderful articles. So let me just give the website to everyone. It's www.oracle20-20.com. Any other thoughts about that? Yeah.
We really want to help people to understand the hidden knowledge, the hidden wisdom, the things that aren't very available. You certainly won't see the same type of articles that you'll see in the Washington Post or the New York Times by any stretch of the imagination. We're going to be very different. And, you know, when I was first getting the magazine in circulation in Atlanta, I would go into places and people would look at me sideways and say, no, I don't think that's a magazine for our place. And it was a challenge for a while because we are cutting edge, we are metaphysical, and we don't make any bones about it.
But I know you've been able now to get into lots of places that are more normal, if you will, and
yeah.
And they really, it really is appreciated as a great resource for the community.
Thanks. Yeah, we're in all the Whole Foods stores. We're mm-hmm. in a number of health food stores, the metaphysical stores here in Atlanta, and actually throughout the Southeast. Mm-hmm. We're in 5 states now.
Excellent.
And at one time we were in Chopra Center.
Wow.
In California. They have some new management who didn't really want to have free publications in their lobby anymore. But I've really been happy to say that we've been very well accepted mm-hmm. in a lot of places mm-hmm. as of late. I think people are waking up more and more.
I think you're right. So let's talk about that for just a minute. Not only as we've been talking about animals and waking up to the treatment of animals and how much we really are responsible for the earth and all of its inhabitants, but also energetically, people are waking up. What has been your sort of recent, if you will, experience?
I found that people who have really strong opinions that metaphysical and religion don't mix are sort of backing off from that a little bit, because after all, religions are all metaphysical. Metaphysical just means beyond the physical.
Yes.
It's very rare that we really encounter someone who absolutely opposes our magazine based on their religious preferences anymore.
Mm-hmm.
10 years ago, that wasn't quite so. But Atlanta is more wide open than a lot of places, I think. Yet when I say Atlanta's more wide open, then we have calls from a number of places that ask, can we please have your magazine to distribute in our center or in our store? And we send them free to whoever asks for them, basically, mm-hmm. to give out in their store or their center.
Excellent. That's very generous, and I know obviously you have advertising that pays for the magazine, but it's still a very generous act to distribute it as so widely as you do. I'm glad you do.
Well, thanks. Yeah, we just want people to be able to know what's out there,
mm-hmm.
to be able to have some understanding of things that have been hidden for so long, because I think it's ancient wisdom that's really coming forward again. Between the cutting edge technology and the ancient wisdom, I believe that the next 10 years is going to be an amazing time for all of us that are on the planet right now.
I think you're right. I mean, just look at how far we've come in the last 10 years with mm-hmm. everything, technology and everything coming forth. It is amazing. So let me ask you a little bit about the Atlantean Mystery School. And everyone, you can go to www.AtlanteanMysterySchool.com to find out more about this, but tell us how that got started.
Well, we realized that the inner space had so many resources and so many people who had so much knowledge that we put together a series of classes, and regularly we're holding classes at the inner space. And it sort of evolved, and as it evolved, I realized that we need to make this into a nonprofit organization. We need to have this in a format that is more accessible to everyone. And I founded the Atlantean Mystery Schools, and I brought people in as guest teachers from a lot of different places. We've been so fortunate to have, the psychics who work at the inner space, who are so knowledgeable in so many subjects, who are also now regular teachers at the Mystery mm-hmm. School. There are other folks in the Atlanta area who have come in and given classes as well. We have a hypnotherapy program that's absolutely amazing, that certifies hypnotherapists under the National Guild. Mm-hmm. Dr. Raymond Moody actually teaches classes at our place as well.
He is an amazing man.
He really is.
I remember taking some of his writing workshops before he was doing the Mystery Schools, and Those were wonderful as well. So, yes, you're very honored to have him, and it's a wonderful resource.
Mm-hmm. We certainly are. And so the Mystery School has two components. One of the components is personal growth. The other component is professional education. We actually will train people to become professional psychics there through our Mystery Schools program. Mm-hmm. We have courses in life coaching. We have courses in professionalism, as well as reading tarot cards, psychic development, mediumship, all of those types of courses that you would expect to find. In addition, we have courses in establishing your own business. We've had at least three of our graduate students who have gone on to either open their own stores or their own businesses.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. That's wonderful. Well, it's a great resource as well. And so if someone wanted to sign up for your Mystery School, is it available online or do they have to be here in Atlanta in person?
Right now it isn't online, but as I'm becoming a little bit more friendly with Skype, I think we can make it be online. We're actually talking right now with Terry Stokes, who writes our palmistry column. Mm-hmm. He lives in England, and he's willing to do a class online on palmistry with us.
Oh, fantastic.
So we're setting that up now. We're not quite there yet, but we're getting close.
Wow. Well, that sounds like a good beginning. And you're right, in the next 10 years, things will change completely. And I know that these metaphysical, how can we put it, skills will really serve people in the future. And I know that, you know, several of my corporate friends or people in business kind of go, why are you into this, Gail? And I have to say to them, it gives me an extra a bit of knowledge of how to walk my path on this earth. And so as people are waking up, just knowing more of how we can be on purpose and use these other parts of our bodies, if you will, the natural awakenings that we have for the good of a better world is really important for people.
I think that's absolutely correct. The fact that people have these skills and we're born with them isn't really taught to us as we're mm-hmm. growing up. We're taught to suppress those skills, but less now than it was even 5 or 10 years ago. More and more, we're taught to listen to our intuition. Mm-hmm. And there are more and more mainstream resources that will give us classes on meditation or classes on mindfulness. Yoga centers are opening all over the country and are considered to be very mainstream. Mm-hmm. Although one of my friends says American yoga really isn't yoga, you know. But it's an open door.
Yes.
For people to become mindful. It's a way for people to quiet their mind and to do something other than just exercise.
Exactly. And we are, you know, we are just not a body. We are a spirit as well. And then an emotional body and a mental body on top of that as well. So I know my husband and I just started going to a Tai Chi center, which does yoga, Tai Chi, but in talking to the manager in more in depth, he said, really, this is more about awakening up your meridians in your body and your higher consciousness. But if I put that on the door, no one would know what, you know, how to necessarily show up and be there. So you're right. It's about normalizing a lot of these parts of who we are into society. And I think that really is happening much more these days.
I believe you're right. Even in corporate America, mm-hmm. We're having the people who work in corporate America are studying meditation and learning how to quiet mm-hmm. the mind. And the corporations are finding that this is very beneficial.
Yes, that's a great example. You're right. And they're doing it in schools, too, with kids, particularly kids who are diagnosed with ADHD and ADD, and really it's helping them quiet the mind and find another part of who they are. So this part of awakening our spiritual centers is really important. So back to animals for a minute. Anything else you would like to to share with our listeners about animals that they might consider?
Yes, I think so. One thing is one of the ways that I'm very active is that I sign a lot of petitions online. You have to make really sure that the petition you're signing isn't just a ploy to get money. But lately I've been working with a group that is working to defund the Veterans Administration's dog laboratories. This is so important for us to do. We absolutely must stop spending our tax money to do these experiments on dogs that are really useless experiments that are spending thousands and thousands of dollars in bringing misery to the dogs. I read an article lately about how much money was spent to buy docile, friendly beagles to then give drugs, put on a treadmill, and kill.
Oh, my.
And we just have to be aware that this is going on and be aware that we refuse to participate in it. And by refusing to participate in the cruelty has to stop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree. Thank you for sharing that. And I want to get on my soapbox for just a minute, I guess, in that the American Kennel Club, which, of course, is the national United States registry for dog breeds here, unfortunately supports puppy mills. They do a great job in registration and in education. I know in the people I've talked to in the higher-ups of the AKC, they have a great heart. They're animal lovers. But when it comes down to funding, unfortunately puppy mills support the AKC with their registration dollars, and puppy mills is with these large volume breeders, back what you're talking about in the beginning of our conversation of, you know, keeping these animals in cages and in their filth or just never exercising, but simply being breeders for dogs. And that has got to stop. Right now they're licensed under the USDA, you know, their Department of the Interior, it's legal. And so these laws need to change is really what it comes down to stop these large volume breeders and have really where you have to be a licensed to breed and maybe even to own a dog, you know, just like we get a driver's license to drive a car. I think there needs to be some kind of minimum educational requirement to even have a pet, perhaps in the future.
Absolutely. Yeah. I just saw a news article this week about a neighbor who saw a dog in the yard next door who wasn't moving and called 911 and the dog was frozen to the ground.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
So, you know, anyone who doesn't realize that these animals are vulnerable and they're sentient beings.
Yes.
They are at our mercy, and we are responsible for them.
Well, and that gets back to what we're talking about with this world as a one earth, one world, where we are all connected, plants, animals, rocks, minerals, humans. And that really is what the metaphysical trainings are about, to me at least, where we start to get into the oneness of life, the oneness of energy. And when we have that awareness, then I know that I treat my animals certainly differently, looking at them as sentient beings than just as property, which is unfortunately what a lot of the laws talk about animals as these days.
Right. And there's also another movement called the non-human rights movement.
Yes.
I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's about giving...
Go ahead.
Giving rights to the laboratory animals that have been so mistreated.
Well, and even more than that, giving rights to, I think, all these factory animals you're talking about as well. I think some of the other countries, I encourage all you listeners to look this up because there are some recent articles. I know that some countries, I think like France and others India. It's India who started giving animals' rights in the courts, more so than even we have here in the United States, which of course isn't very much, but we do have some. But they started doing that so that animals in tourism, in zoos, in different other situations are given rights. And of course, we could have a whole nother show on animal communication. And in fact, I have had some animal communicators on this show, so I encourage you to look at that too. But how we actually can, they are sentient beings. We can talk with them and have co-create our world together.
Absolutely. And I think as we become more aware and more conscious ourselves, we will become less apt to treat animals as property and more apt to treat them as co-inhabitants of the earth.
Exactly, because we're all connected, and if animals are suffering, then actually so are we on this planet.
Absolutely.
As well. So Sherry, we're getting to the end of the show. Is there any last words of wisdom you have for our listeners today?
I think the biggest thing to say is to be in peace and in love. And if you're in peace and in love, if we can feel those emotions, then everything else will fall into place.
Mm. Yes, thank you. That's beautiful.
You're welcome.
So again, everyone, this is Dr. Sherry Henderson, and you can find out more about her at theinnerspace.com, and also at read about the Oracle 2020 magazine at oracle20-20.com. So let's go into our Peace Brain meditation for the last few minutes here, and I invite you all to ground yourself, to take a moment, to take a breath, give yourself that beautiful grounding cord from the last vertebrae of your spine all the way down to the center of the planet, grounding you just like the electrical outlet that has that third grounding wire. And take a breath and let all of these thoughts of how we can treat each other in bad ways just flow down the grounding wire into Mother Earth to be recycled into new bright energy. And start to bring in that love in your heart. Really focus on the beauty of your heart and the love that you feel. Perhaps thinking about a time when you did hold a puppy dog in your arms, or a cat licked your face, or purred up against you and rubbed up against you, or perhaps riding a horse and feeling the majesty of the horse underneath you and the beauty of the wind on your face, or perhaps just holding a beautiful shell or crystal or an object of the earth in your hands. Start to feel the love that is within you towards the creatures of the earth. And take a breath. And let that love expand into your heart and into your whole being, finding the peace and the quiet and the comfort of who you really are, because you are this love. And so now from your heart, visualize beautiful golden threads of light coming out, light and love. And send it to all the animals in your household and see it connecting with them into their heart chakra as well and filling them up with that beautiful love, that connection between you and them. And now send it out to all the animals in your neighborhood, ones that belong to your neighbors, ones that maybe have no human associated with them, that are feral animals, and then also the wild animals that live in your neighborhood. And just visualize in your mind's eye that beautiful golden threads of light and love going out and touching them as well, with appreciation, with love, with a gift of this unconditional love that they have been giving back to you. So feel it within your heart, and now expand one more time the love out to all the beings on the planet. including the animals in these horrible situations that are in factory farming or these breeding facilities that have no consideration for animals as sentient beings, or these laboratories that we misuse and mistreat and think we need these animals for testing, but we really do not. Send compassion and love to them. And then also to the humans that work with them, that there may be a change of heart, that we can transform as a human race into a world of beings that work together, that actually bring that love and light to an earth where humans and animals respect each other and honor each other and do not kill each other, but cohabitate on this earth together. That we have a beautiful earth that has clean air and water and food for all, where we are farming vegetables and plants and giving them beautiful light as well so that they can nourish those who need to be nourished by plants. See a world of love and light together in unity and in grace and harmony. And take a breath and feel that love in your heart, that new possibility. And then I challenge you to think of how you can help create it. What is your part in all of this? What can you do, just one or two things to begin with, that perhaps will snowball into many more things? So take a step today, take an action today, and this week, and this month, and this new year of 2018. To bring that vision into reality. Thank you for tuning in to the Peace Brain Show today. If you want to find out more about me, Dr. Gail Lash, you can go to my website, tourismforpeace.com, or email me at hello@peacebrain.org. And again, I want to thank my guest today, Dr. Sherry Henderson, and you can find out more about her at theinnerspace.com. And now go forth, please, and activate your peace brain and put your mark on the World Peace Trails map. Many, many blessings. Namaste.
Thank you for joining us on the Peace Brain Show. You can find us at tourismforpeace.com. Be sure to check out Dr. Gail's Akashic Records readings, her peace plans for your business or organization, and her recently published book, Opt for Peace, 9 Essential Steps to Achieving Peace, Power, and Prosperity. Tune in to BBS Radio Station 1 every other Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific and 8 p.m. Eastern to the Peace Brain Show for your next installment of wonder, inspiration, and practical peace.